Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's July 16th, 2013. It's July Good Beer Month. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, the Good Beer Seal. And I'm here with my wingman tonight, James Langstein from Bronx Ale House. How are you, James?
Great. Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
So it's July Good Beer Month. It's founded by the Good Beer Seal bars, which include now Bronx Ale House, Jimmy's Number 43, Double Windsor's in the house tonight, Blind Tiger. We've had a lot of things going on. We've been at WNYC, the Green Space, doing the Craft Beer Jam, and a lot of good things are coming up, including, thanks to our sponsors, GreatBrewers.com, on July 27th, there's the New York State Food and Beer Expo. I think I'm just announcing it tonight. It's only less than 2 weeks away, but the planning's been in the works for a couple months. It's at the East River State Park. We got state approval. We're going to have some of the top New York State breweries, over 20 of them there, and the tickets go anywhere from $10 at the door to a VIP ticket. So it's definitely, if you want to celebrate July Good Beer Month, you want to be outside on the Williamsburg waterfront, definitely check it out, the New York State Food and Beer Expo, July 27th, and you can get tickets at goodbeerseal.com. All right, so there's so much going on. We've had Mayor Bloomberg issue a proclamation that it's July Good Beer Month. But there's so many really good stories. I think right now online in tomorrow's dining section in the Times, there's a really great article by Clay Risen about all the new small nano breweries. So we've kind of like reached, you know, gone beyond that tipping point of where you know you can get good beer, and then there's a lot of new beers out there. But there's still not as many beers as you think. You know, some people say, oh, there's too many craft beers. But, you know, I go an hour outside of the city and I still see the same lineup. There's macro, and maybe one local beer. So I still think we have a long way to go. And what we're really trying to promote are the good small local breweries. So, James, I know you up in the Bronx Ale House. How long have you been there now?
We'll be celebrating our fourth anniversary next month.
So you got to see a lot of different beers. You guys were one of the first places that Bronx Brewery served, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did their launch 3 years ago, I guess it is now, close to that anyway.
And have you had any of the new, like, Westchester breweries up there?
Yeah, we've been serving a lot of Peekskill lately, and a lot of us in this room right now are having one of those right now, their Eastern Standard IPA. As well as, Captain Lawrence has been around a little while, but they're one of the closest breweries to our location up in the Bronx. Peekskill's making great stuff. There's some stuff, Rushing Duck is out there. Go a little farther upstate to Crossroads, and that's really been one of the focuses on what we do at the Bronx Ale House, is, you know, keeping it local.
That's great, man. And all those beers will be at the New York State Food and Beer Expo, July 27th. I'm going to keep plugging it because it's a really good event. We put a lot behind it, and it's really the flagship event for July Good Beer Month. So another good buddy, Chris Genua. How do you say
that's,
your last
that's
name?
Good.
How do you, tell us your name.
Chris Genua. Yep.
And you're from Double Windsor.
That's right.
Another Good Beer Seal bar in Brooklyn. So we're really trying to celebrate that connection. What is a Good Beer Seal? It's a small group of independently owned craft beer bars, and we've tried to make a difference. We've tried to say, hey, there's guys that are, you know, whether you have two beers, three bars, or two bars, or one, it's small, independently owned, and you're kind of the tasting rooms for craft breweries. So you we've had you on before, but the reason you're here tonight is you're working with a new small brewery.
I am. I'm super excited to be working with these guys, Joe and Lauren Grimm of Grimm Artisanal Ales. Joe has been a bartender at Double Windsor for a year or so now. He came to me, introduced by my brother, told me he wanted to brew beer in Brooklyn. I told him he was fucking crazy. That's true. But he did it. He's brewing beer, and we're drinking his From the Hip, a rose hip infused blonde ale, Belgian style blonde. And it is fantastic. It's a great summer beer.
So let's get, so you guys say hello and say your names, because you're kind of the new cool people on the block.
So we are Grimm Artisanal Ales. I'm Lauren Grimm, and this
and
is...
I'm Joe Grimm.
Joe.
We're a nomadic brewery, so we travel around to different breweries. We don't have our own equipment. We're doing limited edition Belgian-inspired beers.
Everything we want to do is going to be... like a single batch, just a one-off batch. We're crazy home brewers, so we brew all the time, and we have got, you know, tons of different homemade versions of all these beers. And so we're just going to kind of do it one at a time. We don't want to do a flagship or anything like that. We just want to make, you know, limited edition, really special, unique beers that we can release for the season. And we'll see where it takes us.
So, Grimm Artisanal Ale. So, I know you're doing a launch in New York. This is actually kind of the launch tonight, right? You're on Beer Station Radio.
This is the first time anybody's had our beer that we made at the brewery.
So, where are you going to be this week in New York City?
We are going to be at Jimmy's Number 43. Woo! And the Double Windsor.
Yeah, so the Manhattan launch is on Thursday.
From 5:30 to 11 p.m.
That's at Jimmy's. Oh, and then the next day is at the Double Windsor in Brooklyn, where I am usually behind the bar. Not this Friday, though.
So from 7 to 11.
So walk us through the steps. So you guys are like a licensed brewery, and you're registered in New York State?
Right.
Okay. And are you going to become part of the New York City Brewers Guild if you're in New York City?
Maybe so. We haven't really, like... You know, there's
one
so many
step
things
at a
to
time.
Do.
Yeah,
but then we're not a licensed brewery. We're you know, you get what's called a wholesaler's permit, so it's like a different permit.
You have to own a brewery in order to be a licensed brewery. So we have a different kind of arrangement where we are able to go to different breweries and brew on their equipment without owning our own equipment.
So we just make a date. We like make sure all of our ingredients arrive beforehand, go to the brewery, brew the beer, and then go back, you know, 3 weeks later, package it, and bring it to New York and, you know.
So where are you making beer now?
This first batch happened at Paper City Brewing in Massachusetts. It's about a 3-hour drive. So we'll see, you know, to see how that relationship develops. And
so this is the first batch of your beer.
Yeah.
And yep. It's here today on Beer Sessions Radio. I'll tell you something that's cool. What I love is that everyone's doing it differently. And James, you've probably seen this, and we're going to bring in Tom Acatelli, author of The Audacity of Hops. We got Juan Montero, who not only is a well-traveled writer and beer expert, he won Beer Drink of the Year at the Wine Coop Brewery this year. So we got some really cool people in the room. But, you know, there's so many great stories. And I think New York State has all these great opportunities for small breweries, because I didn't even know about this wholesale thing. But you guys are able to make beer and still sell it here, right?
Yep.
Wow. Amazing. Let's make a toast to New York State. New York State is really rocking it out in the and also at the New York State Food and Beer Expo. I don't keep pitching events, but I got to pitch this one. On July 27th, the president of the New York State Brewers Association, Dave Kataleski, who has for many years been the owner and brewer at Empire Brewing in Syracuse, will be presenting him with a special award, because he's really a guy that's made a difference. He's worked with legislators. He's worked with Chuck Schumer. He's worked with the governor. He's really worked to make all these, you know, I would say liberal laws happen, that you can be a brewer in different forms in New York State and doing exactly what you guys are doing. It's like, I never heard of that one. You know, I mean, I know that I could get a license and start brewing beer in the back of my bar, restaurant brewery license. And there's so many of these great little licenses. And New York State's one of the few states that really, really gives it to you. So I'm going to turn this over to Tom. I can tell you've got a great book, The Audacity of Hops. We've talked about it a lot on the air. We did a film screening of the Michael Jackson movie, mm-hmm. Beer Hunter movie, and we talked about your book as well. So, you know, going back to what you researched, tell us a little about that, and then tell us what you're seeing is going on in the craft beer community today.
Well, thank you for having me, Jimmy. The Audacity of Hops basically traces the rise of the craft beer movement going back to August 1965, when Fritz Maytag bought control of the Anchor Brewery in San Francisco and sort of unknowingly, because he was the only game in town for about 10 years, set the parameters of small, traditional, small batch beer made from traditional ingredients by independent breweries. Goes all the way into the growth of the mid-1970s, late 1970s, the explosion in the 80s and 90s, the shakeout in the late 1990s when about one-third of the craft brewery operations in the United States closed in a few years, and it looked like it was all over, and then back to the sustained growth we've had in the last 10, 15 years. That brings me to what's happening right now. I think, I mean, the question I get the most is about, well, you know, there's something like 2,300 craft breweries and brew pubs in the United States, more than there, you know, more breweries, period, than there has been since the 1880s. Surely there'll be another shakeout. And I say there isn't going to be, because unlike the 1990s, the quality is very uniform, and the training of the brewmasters and the skill level is very high. Whereas in the 1990s, a lot of people were getting in because people like Jim Cook at Boston Beer Company, Pete Slosberg of Pete's Wicked Ale, they made it look easy, even though they were working very hard behind the scenes. And so a lot of people jumped in, and some of the beer was of very dubious quality and lost a lot of consumers. So, but that's not the case now.
That's a good point. I mean, everyone always talks about these cycles, and it's a little different than like boom and bust of the stock market or something. I mean, people really, don't you think so, James? I mean, I think there's room for more really good small breweries.
I think there's a lot of room for growth, but one of the things I sometimes question is the quality today is probably a lot greater than that last bust, but also the taste of the consumer.
Right.
The demand is much higher for it to be great, so there still could be, you know, right. You still have to make a great
product.
No, that's
a very good point.
Because the consumer is more knowledgeable.
Right. There's a whole beer culture now, thanks in part to, you know, the internet, that was not there 12 to 15 years ago. It really wasn't. And here's a stat, just really quick. I think it was the American Wine Institute out of California about 2 weeks ago said that there's 8,000 wineries in Canada and the United States. So there is plenty of room for breweries to grow. So
let's bring in Warren Montero again, our beer drinker of the year and a writer and traveler. What do you think about this, Warren?
Yeah, I just wanted to add in here. Actually, I got the word yesterday we've now cracked 2,500. As the number of breweries in the U.S. But what I wanted to say was there really are two kinds of craft breweries now. We're starting to get into that old, old model where we've got some craft breweries that are awfully big. And then we've got a whole gang of craft breweries at the bottom level, not in terms of how it tastes, but in terms of how much you're making. And I think we're getting into 25-mile limit, 55-mile limit, you know, breweries. And that's a good thing. It's community brewery. Mm-hmm. And then you have your big guys like Sierra Nevada, Rogue, who else? Loads of them, who are just really pretty much dominating the greater reach of the market.
Yeah.
So I don't see a great conflict between the two.
No, not at all. That's great, Warren. So, Tom, jump in. You know what's going on? It's kind of like soup, man. It's like, you know, I've said go outside of the city. You know, there's got to be more than one person making good soup in every town.
Right. You know? No, but Warren brings up a very good point. One of the things that happened in the shakeout for the breweries that did not go under, they sort of contracted their distribution. And the best example I can give is something David Geary told me. He owns D.L. Geary's in Portland, Maine. Fantastic beer. And it's now the oldest craft brewery in the East Coast and maybe east of the Mississippi, I think. But he said, you know, I realized I did not have to distribute beyond the Northeast. The Northeast of the United States has 65 million people, which is more than, you know, Italy and the UK. That's plenty of consumers. So a lot of guys in the 90s who were trying to grow rapidly sort of came back to their immediate surroundings and their immediate regions. And that is a fantastic thing.
All right, we're going to do a question. If Maggie's out there, we're going to you can tweet Twitter at beer_sessions. Okay, there's a question. If you can answer this, you get a free I Like Beer T-shirt. Okay, from Tom Acatelli's book, The Audacity of Hops, and we've seen this guy's picture a lot recently. There was a gentleman named Jack McAuliffe. If you can tweet and know the name of his brewery, you'll get a free I Like Beer T-shirt. Check in at beer_sessions. All right, we'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Yeah. You're listening to Home of Emptiness by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org. But don't feel empty. Check out more Beer Sessions Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's July Good Beer Month in New York, and I'm full of Good Beer Seal bar owners from New York. James from Bronx Ale House, Chris Genoa from Double Windsor. You know, my family's from Genoa, England.
No, I'm not.
You're not. That's why I saw it. Where's this mic? Come on. There's like 10 people in the room right now. We're going to make a group toast because there's so many cool people. Everybody toast their glasses. We're drinking the Grim Artisanal Ale. They're a new release in New York. They're one of these new great expressions of the craft beer movement. You know, I'm still amazed that you guys are just doing it. I mean, Chris, what do you think? I mean, gosh, not too long ago they were just making homebrew, and now we're seeing a lot of crossovers. My buddy Chris Kuzme, it went from being a homebrewer to being the pro brewer for 508 Gastrobrewery. But it's not that much more than a homebrew setup, you know? It's so many great up, and I see the growth in craft beer is all the brew pubs and nano breweries. I mean, that's what we were just talking about. Tom was talking about that. You know, and Warren, that the idea that there's in these small communities, there's room for more brewers.
Yeah, I mean, so. There definitely is. I mean, with Joe, you know, Joe and Lauren, I mean, I'm a home brewer too, but these guys are way above. They take it to a much different level. You know, it's, I think that's what really separates, you know, the home brewers from the professional brewers. But yeah, I think because bars are so interested in rotating taps, that's kind of the thing today. What's new? We need like a constant influx of new breweries doing new beers. It's I'd hate to be a brewer because of that, because we always want, you know, what's seasonal, what's new. And so, you know, from a bar's standpoint, it's great. From the brewery, I'm not sure how great that is.
I mean, it used to be, and James knows too, it used to be that I think the breweries wanted to have a permanent line. And then it kind of went from a permanent line to they would say, well, hopefully you can take one keg a month. And now it's like, yeah, I feel like we need to have a new beer on every day.
There's a huge demand and a huge market, you know, our customers that come in and just want to try what's new. And they will definitely go back to certain breweries, certain styles, and certain really great beers all the time. But they definitely want to try a new flavor, a creative style, a new ingredient that they've never thought to have in a beer before. And there's a huge market for that, which may lend itself to success of something like Grim, which is not necessarily brewing one flagship beer all the time.
Well, I think it's different, too. I think that it's like, you know, used to be like doing an indie rock band, and then it was like starting, you know, making cheese. I feel like that it's okay to make beer and not feel like you're going to have to make $1 million or something, you know? I mean, you can just do it for love. It's like a lot of us get into the business. It's like, I enjoy cooking, and I want to cook. You know, do you guys feel that way a little bit, that you're enjoying what you're doing? And
oh, yeah, completely. I mean, that's why we're doing it. It's because we enjoy it.
It's what we do anyway. We're not trying to grow too fast or anything. We just want to challenge ourselves, be creative, make the kinds of beers that we can't already find out there that we wish we could be drinking.
Yeah, and I think as more and more people learn about beer and are more educated consumers, there's more room for, you know, as everybody else was saying, growth, but also experimentation. And I think that's something that we're both really interested in is, you know, just like making things that you can't, you know, find just, you know, anywhere, that are special, that are really good, you know, that we want to be drinking.
Tom, did you bring some beers?
I did. The one we're having right now is the 25th anniversary lager from Brooklyn Brewery. It's fantastic. And because it's Good Beer Month in New York City, and this will make fantastic radio because it's show and tell, but I brought a bottle of New Amsterdam Amber Ale from 1985, at least. It's still bottled. It was given to me by the son of Matthew Reich, who started New Amsterdam in 1982. as a contract operation out of FX Matt in Utica, and then opened a brew pub in Chelsea in Western Manhattan. I think it was in 86. It's in my book. But this is an unopened bottle. There's probably a few in the world. So I
just you bought it on the corner of 2nd Avenue and 4th Street in that deli with 400 beers.
Yeah,
it's been there for 20 years. It's,
right, exactly.
That's the freshness issue.
Yeah. Matthew, I ran into Matthew a couple months ago at the Brooklyn Brewery, actually. He suggested nobody ever drink it, that it's probably well past its
How about if we open it for the hell of it? You know, because a few years ago when our good friend Ray Dieter died, his wife gave us some old bottles, and we opened a few on the air. Let's do it. Why not?
I would love it, but somebody has to take a sip.
I'll take a sip.
All right, let's do it. I want some, too.
You know, the only reason I'm in this business, and people may not know this about me, is I'll try anything. One time I was at a kid's birthday party, and I ate worms and dirt. You know,
are you serious?
I'll eat anything.
What happened?
It wasn't bad. It was a little dirty.
Uh-huh. Let's do it.
This was last year.
Yeah, let's open it up. This is historical, and this is why you should go out and get Tom McAtelly's The Audacity Hops. And I have to say, I've read a lot of beer books. I think we've reviewed over 30 on the show, and this is the first one that really talked about the beginning of craft beer in America. And if you don't know who Jack McAuliffe is, you got to get the book, and you could probably Google it. But
sure.
Yeah,
no, it's
another
anyway,
hint is that another brewery recently came out with. They copied Jack McAuliffe's recipe. And should we say it on the air yet? Maggie, has anybody texted it in yet? I mean, the funny thing is, Jack McAuliffe is, I mean, since your book came out, you wrote an article about it for All About Beer. Mm-hmm. Jack McAuliffe was on the cover, the photo that was in your book. Mm-hmm.
He's posing with on that photo, he's posing with a barrel washer that he got for about $50 and fixed up himself. And that says a lot about the early craft beer movement, is the sort of do-it-yourself ethos that persists today. I mean, these brewmasters, they work very hard.
Well, last week when Garrett Oliver was on, and we were talking about July Goober Month, he said, you know, for me, the definition of craft is actually you can meet the person who's making the beer. Mm-hmm. And looking back to the roots of the American craft beer in your book, I was really impressed that not only could you meet the people, they were actually making their equipment. So they were so hands-on.
Right.
Yeah.
They were fabricating. What happened in California, where the movement started, it was sort of fortuitous for the craft brewers, not for the dairy industry, but the dairy industry out there was contracting. So you had a lot of old vessels and materiel that the craft brewers then fabricated themselves. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Let's just jump on. Warren, you know, you go back to those days a little bit. Warren Montero.
Oh, thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah, well, we know you do, because you've been doing this a long time. But tell us about the first... you know, craft beer experience you had. I don't want to hear about your first beer. When we first started, we've learned a lot in 3.5 years. We used to say, what was your first beer? And you realize that all the Americans said this 40-ouncer of something. But then I would meet English people who actually said it was the opposite. When they were younger, they had really good beers, and they kind of have gone away. So let's talk about the first craft beer experience for you, Warren.
Well,
and what year was it?
I would say for me it was 1973, and it was a couple of bottles. One was, they were all British, it was Lorimer's, it was Volk's Double Maxim, and it was a Sam Smith's Nut Brown. But in America, I think my first craft beer was, believe it or not, at New Amsterdam restaurant over on, what was it, 25th Street and I think it was 12th Avenue. Yeah.
Tom, let's do it. Let's open. This is kind of historical.
Yeah. All right.
You know, people go, they find a wine that Thomas Jefferson made or something like that.
Except it's warm.
Warm. It's a little warm.
You want us to wait?
Well, no, we can do it. just to recap, it's at least 28 years old. It's an amber ale.
It's not a barrel.
It was right made in amber. Utica and marketed in and sold in Manhattan. So let's give it a shot. Yeah, I have two other bottles, so if this works, this could be something.
Well, we have a good Brasil certified bar owner here. Okay. James, he must have a special opening device.
Do we have? Is this a twist? No, it is.
Hazmat
it's a
suit.
No. All right.
Maybe Joe, the barback from Double Windsor. Who's got a... You guys don't have openers? Come on. This is a beer show.
I got one.
Yeah. Okay, for the breweries on 11th Avenue and 26th Street. Okay, 5-cent deposit. Wow. All right.
Okay, beer sensei comes across.
All right, stand back. It might explode now. If anything, it's probably just going to kind of...
It still has some fizz.
A little bit of fizz. Just a little hiss there. Oh, look at that. Very clean.
All right. I'll take a taste.
Wow. It actually has like a... sort of a vermouth smell. It's like kind of maple syrup. All right, let's give it a shot.
Let's get in the glass. Let's pour it out and see how long.
Who wants to take the first sip? All right.
With some old wines, too, that they sometimes they come around, but probably this will just go flat soon.
No, it has it has a head.
Look at that.
It's effervescent as can be.
We got to try it.
A little oxygenated. Well, a whole bunch. Let's see.
All right. Warren's taking the first sip.
Well, it's old.
But we still have it. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, cheers to the New Amsterdam guys. So, whatever happened to them, Tom?
Well, the sort of cost of operating a craft brewery in Manhattan at the time, throughout the late 80s, early 1990s, sort of precluded any growth. So they Matthew Reich sold the operation to FX Matt. I think it was, again, it's in my book, late 1990s or maybe even before that, and went out of business. But the interesting thing is, and this is sort of emblematic of the whole movement. It's the reason I brought the 25th anniversary lager from Brooklyn Brewery is that when Matthew started New Amsterdam, okay, in the early 1980s, one of his first visitors was Steve Hindy, who of course is the prince still involved, co-founder and still very much involved in Brooklyn Brewery. And so one of the sort of meta topics and meta trends of the American craft beer movement is that people spun off each other. People were inspired by each other. They got advice from each other. It was a very approachable, amiable industry for the most part. And that continues today, I think. I mean, I'd like, you know, like some feedback, but...
I get the impression that probably 90% of craft brewers are very willing to work together and collaborate on beers together sometimes, and at the very least share their knowledge and in a lot of cases these days share their space so that other people can brew really great stuff in their, you know, breweries they've built.
James, have you ever tasted like really old beers like this before?
I've tasted beer that old, but probably beer that was meant to possibly get that old. I recently opened up a bottle of 1993 John Courage Imperial Stout, which was still really nice. A 7-ounce bottle that I think of Ray when I drank it and doing this show with Ray a few years ago, because I won it in a raffle at DBA here in Brooklyn during their Cask Festival in the spring. The raffle was for his family, his kids and stuff. So it was great to open that beer with friends and kind of remind myself of being on this show when Ray was in the chair that I'm sitting in now.
Well, let's toast to that. Okay. All right. Well, hey, we're just drinking beer, guys. But, you know, there's a cool community here. We got some special guests in the back again. The Culinary Trust, it's a very cool, I don't know, Jonathan Gross and Liz Lesnick, they actually bought craft beer for the day with Jimmy. So they actually spent like $5,000 to come on the air today to support the Culinary Trust.
At least.
Yeah. So, Jonathan, you're on the spot. So you live on the Upper East Side in New York City. Tell us a couple places near you that you like to get good beer at.
A couple. Well, I can tell you at least one place on First Avenue that does a decent job is the Pony Bar.
Here.
Nice spot and very... nice diverse offerings, and I'm a fan, although I wish they would offer more in a little larger sizes for us thirsty consumers. They're too much of a fan of the 8-ounce pour. But
so you like a big glass of beer?
Is that just me? I don't know.
And how many growlers do you have in your kitchen right now?
Actually, I think just one at the moment. I'm trying to be a little bit more responsible, but I do like to stop off at. I work near Grand Central, and there's a nice branch of
the beer pantry, beer table pantry, right?
Exactly.
Rock on, and Liz, just tell us about the Culinary Trust because you bought this at the auction.
Tell you about the Culinary Trust. I can't tell you tons about the Culinary Trust, except that I love looking at online auctions, and I am into food and food writing and local producers, and I just happened to be surfing online when I probably should have been doing something else, and this lot caught my eye, and looking for a 15th anniversary present for my husband, who is a beer aficionado. And
all right,
this looked perfect. So,
well, thanks for doing that. And if any of you guys want to Google the Culinary Trust, they have some great programs. And our good friend Bill Telepan, who's a great chef in New York, is behind a lot of their programs. So definitely we try to support the Culinary Trust every year. And they spent $5,000 a beer today. So if you want to give us $5,000, give it. How about this? It's a pitch. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You want to be a member? I think starting at, what, $60 and up, you can become a member. So they paid $5,000 to be on the air today. But I think for like $60, you could be a member of Heritage Radio Network and get invited to. You know, it's coming up. Let's quickly do all the fest. August 11th, I'm jumping ahead. It's the Hawaiian Barbecue, Heritage Radio Network, Daniel Delaney, Brisket Town, here in Roberta's backyard. That's one of the coolest things. And I think if you're a member, there's some huge discounts. So go to heritageradionetwork.org. Empire Brewing, our buddy Dave Catalesi is going to be here. That's the thing to do on August 11th and on July 27th. New York State Food and Beer Expo with 20 great breweries. All right, we'll take another short break. Thanks to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This is called This Body by Pamela Royal on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile beer cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're recording live at Roberta's in Bushwick. It's a fine two-starred restaurant, and I have to say it's one of the highlights of our night is that we meet here, we have some beers at the bar, we do the show, and then we hang out and have dinner. It's a great industry networking night, and any of you are welcome to join us here anytime at Roberta's. But if you become a member of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org, I think it even starts at $25 memberships. You get a lot of special benefits. And our friends Jonathan Gross and Liz Lesnick, they supported the Culinary Trust. They're here with us tonight, and we're going to have a great dinner. So going around the room, we got James Langstein from the Bronx Ale House and Chris Genoa from Double Windsor. So you guys are good Brasil bar owners. Do you know anything about that? Because it means something to some people, but I don't know what it means, really.
Do I know anything about it?
Yeah, what is the good Brasil?
It's a seal. It's an actual zoo seal drinking a beer, and you get to put a sticker of it on your door, which is awesome.
And then why? Because you have good beer?
Because I guess so. I don't know. It was really cool when we were inducted into it. You know, you don't get many like awards as being a bar owner, right? You don't get very much accolade. So
no, it was nice to get an award. It's not really what I was going for, but but no, it actually is kind of an honor to be in it, to know that your peers, your colleagues, respect what you do in terms of the quality of the products you have in your place, the education that sometimes, you know, as we talked about before the show, that in neighborhoods that like our place in the Bronx and yours in Brooklyn, that sometimes we provide to the neighborhood before, you know, they're necessarily become the craft beer nerds that they are in the place now.
just so our listeners know that the Good Brasil, it's only in New York City, but it's there is an independent group of beer and food writers who each year go out and choose you know, who's deserves to be in it. So, you know, you're chosen by your peers and by the beer and food writer community. So cheers to you guys. And we'll be on July 31st, one of the annual events of July Good Beer Month is Edible Brooklyn in Manhattan hosts an event called Good Beer. And it's going to be at 82 Mercer this year in Manhattan. And we'll be doing our Good Beer Seal Awards there early on there. So you can, if you come to the back of 82 Mercer on July 31st, we'll have a special bar with some Good Beer Seal owners. We'll be pouring some special stashes. You're just learning about this tonight, James. But we'll be pouring special stashes of beer from our cellar. And you can learn about who the new Good Beer Seal bars are. So there's a lot of good things. I'll tell you about July Good Beer Month. It's kind of fun. It was a whim. You know, in 2008, there was the first New York City Beer Week, or New York City Craft Beer Week. And some of us beer bar owners said, you know what? We do this year round. Let's get together. And it was guys like Dave Broderick at Blind Tiger and Ray Dieter at DBA and Gary Gillis on Standings and Burp Castle and a few others. We said, you know, we do this year round. What can we do about it? So we said, let's create the Good Beer Seal. Let's create our own month called July Good Beer Month. And I have to say, it's been a good experience because the mayor each year has given us a proclamation. And, you know, we've tried to work with local breweries, but it's really just a month to say, hey, let's give a shout out to the guys like Chris and James who do this every day of the year. And they're dedicated to having really good beer. And I don't know. I just want to say cheers to you guys because I like it. And whenever I go out, where do I go? A great story is last year someone said, you know, I was in Brooklyn and I was kind of lost and I thought it was a dive bar, but I saw the Good Beer Seal on the window. And I went in and I said, what bar was that? They said, 4th Avenue Pub. 4th Avenue Pub is a pretty good bar.
Yeah.
So it's a way for us to all work together. But cheers to that. And what else should we do next? What am I drinking? That's the big question. I'm drinking the Brewery Omegang Florida Hublin, the summer. I call it a summer saison. Did you bring that in, James?
I did, yeah. And I brought it thinking of being here with Tom and his book, The Audacity of Hops. And as opposed to just bringing in an IPA, which is the most, you know, glaring example of hops use, I was interested in having, you know, some hops, Hublin, in a Belgian ale. So, and it's one of my favorite summer beers because it's not simply just a light, fruity, you know, easy drinking thing, which it is, but it has a little bit more body to it.
James, what are some of the beers you have on tap right now that you'd like to tell our listeners about?
We have some really interesting stuff. I was really impressed with Breckenridge's Hoppy Wheat, which is not always a style that I really go for, but the wheat didn't conflict with the hops the way I often find does in that style. So that's a great session ale we have on now. We've had the Vicarious Triple Goose recently, which is just a beautiful blend of two different styles.
The brewer was in town recently.
Yeah.
Did you meet her?
I met her actually at the Single Cut Brewery, which is one of the really great new local breweries in New York City. You know, we happened to be there checking that place out on the same night, so it was nice to meet her. And she's making some really great beer, you know, and it's not a profession full of women, so it's really nice to meet a young woman really doing it well.
It's fun to hang out with her, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, and Chris from Double Windsor.
Tell us something. Dirty.
It was not dirty. Come on. She's the most professional. You know, the thing about women in beer, they're very professional. So, Chris, tell us about what you have on tap right now at Double Windsor that you like a lot.
We just tapped the Founders Rubaeus. That's their new raspberry beer. I actually brought a growler of it. Really nice. I'm not a huge fan of fruit beers usually, but this one gets the tartness of raspberries along with the sweetness.
Did you bring a growler?
I did.
Let's pop it. Come on.
Pop it.
We're gonna drink beer. That's what we do on there. Let's make a toast. We drink beer on there and we talk about politics. No.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, Zimmerman. Sorry. We're not going there. No way. But
that's really good. I don't know if he needs his ego stroked anymore, but we have Evil Twins Imperial Biscotti Break, which is an awesome, awesome Imperial Porter brewed with almonds and espresso, which I love. We have that on as well. Trying to think what else. Oh, Leipziger, the Goza, which is one of my favorite summer beers, brewed with coriander and sea salt.
And you have that on draft?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, that's a great one. I've never seen it on draft before.
I have it on a lot. It's pretty easily available.
So Friday we should come to Double Windsor, check out the Grim. Lauren, help me out. What is the name of your beer? It's too many words.
From the hip.
From the hip.
From the hip.
A Belgian style rose hip blonde.
But what's the name of your brewery?
Oh, Grim Artisanal Ales.
Okay. It's too many words for me.
You can just say Grim.
Grim.
Grim. Yeah.
And that's really your last name, Joe, right? Joe Grim?
It is. Yep. Joe and Lauren Grim.
All right.
Okay. So the beer better be good. It's got our name on it.
Well, yeah. It's your first batch, so we know you got a long way to go, but we're really proud of you. I think it's kind of ballsy. I mean, you guys just made a first batch of beer, and you're launching it in Manhattan. I mean, come on, go for it, guys. You know, that's the whole spirit, you know?
I just want to drop something in on Gozo, which is a really interesting, very old, very new style for us. That have you ever considered putting a little finger bowl of fleur de sel on the bar? So that people can get a little fleck of salt to get it just right.
I've thought about it, but I feel like the really good Gozas already have like the perfect amount of salt. It's just like barely detectable, you know? That's just like you get like a little hint of sea salt. But it goes great with any kind of salty food, for sure.
Chris, what's your background, man? That's a little Epicurean of you.
Is it?
Oh, that's in a good way. And how did you get into this?
You know, I kind of fell into it. I'm a writer, and I, writers don't make any
news
money.
To me, everybody.
Writers don't make any money.
I didn't know that.
So you have to figure out a way to make money, so I always bartended, and that sort of led into craft beer, because I love craft beer, and that's just sort of a way for me to make money and support my writing.
So when you first started out, give us like a approximate year.
Oh, God. I mean, you know, I grew up outside of Philly, so we drank a lot of Yingling, and Sam Adams, too, but my first real craft beer would be in the 90s. It would be Victory, because I grew up right probably 10 minutes from the Victory Brewery, and that was the first time I remember going. My parents said, hey, we're going to a craft brew pub. I had no idea what she was talking about, but it was great. We ate pizza, and I drank a little of their... I even remember it was their fall, their Mersin they do. It was fantastic. Yeah.
You had awesome parents.
I know, right? I was totally underage at that point, too.
Well, cheers to you guys. Yeah. Well, Tom, you know, we've talked about your book a lot, and I feel like everyone here should read it, The Audacity of Hops. It's funny thing, last week we were at WNYC doing this event at the Green Room called Craft Beer Jam, and I just said, oh, this is a really great book you should all read. The Audacity of Hops, and everyone laughed.
Yeah.
So how did you come up with that title?
I used it as a headline actually at the New York Observer many years ago, and it was just sort of out there. It's a play off of President Obama's first memoir, The Audacity of Hope, and that's basically it. I just changed the letter. I would also like to point out, though, it became sort of serendipitous because he is the first president to have homebrewing in the White House in its 210-year history. They served a honey ale or honey porter in February 2011 for the Super Bowl, made with honey from a beehive on the estate grounds. So... that all worked out. But I do want to raise something because everybody's been talking about different styles, and these beers are just absolutely fantastic, and there's a lot of experimentation. I think that's sort of a cornerstone right now and has been for a good 15 to 20 years of American craft beer. And because of that, European emerging nascent craft beer movements in places like Argentina, Italy, and France, and I can tell you firsthand, you know, traveling in France, they look to American brewers now for inspiration. Whereas a generation ago, everybody looked to Belgium, the Czech Republic, Germany. They're all looking to the United States now, and Japan's the same way. I actually ran into a man in an event in Omegang in upstate New York 2 weeks ago whose son is working in craft beer in Japan, and they all want to know what's going on in the United States. So... speaks very well of the whole movement.
All right, man.
I feel like that's a trend, and I've felt for many years now that the American craft beer movement is really making the best, most interesting beer in the world now, mm-hmm. and it's partially because we lacked a tradition of it, mm-hmm. so therefore we didn't have rules governing it.
And the fact that it's really new has made it really interesting. And you see brewers in, you know, especially Northern Europe and Scandinavia, you know, copying American mm-hmm. models and American styles in that nomad brewing tradition.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. You know, there's so many people. I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's like 8 or 9 people in this room, which is awesome, and I love it. We're going to have everybody in the room say what their favorite beer was from this past weekend. And if you didn't drink beer, you're on the wrong show. So, James, what was your favorite beer from the last weekend?
My favorite beer this past weekend, it was a warm weekend, so it was that Breckenridge Hoppy Wheat that I talked about earlier. Right. Nice, light, enough hops to give it a little punch, but good summer ale.
And Jonathan Gross, our Culinary Trust winner here. Let him on. Give him a microphone. Come on, guys.
It's bad. Something from Stouts, but I can't remember what it was.
You're not really a beer drinker.
But it was
come
tasty.
Listen.
That's all I'll say.
You should join the Heritage Radio Network. Okay. Lauren from Grimm.
To be completely honest, you know, we make a lot of home brews, and I drink all of our Saisons. We did a Saison experiment with 6 different yeasts, and a Saison is really good for the summertime, so I was a fan of the Saison, too.
All right. And Warren Montero for the Beer Drinker of the Year.
Okay, and Beer Sensei was up in Vermont, and I came back with a growler of Hill Farmstead's new double IPA, and we poured it to Blind Tiger to great acclaim.
Wow, awesome. Joe Grimm.
I'm really enjoying the Allagash Confluence that we have at the Double Windsor right now. It's really good. A little Brett in it.
All right, Tom. And you live in Boston, right?
Yes, I do. I had I think it was a session ale from this brewery just north of Boston called Notch. It was fantastic. Very light, very very summery. Liked it.
That's great. Well, say hello to the Notch guys. Who's the brewer up there? It's Chris something, right?
I don't know, but I just want to say to Notch Brewery, I love everything they put out. Like they do a Saison, they do a Pilsner. They don't do an IPA.
No, and they buy some malt from Valley Malt
in Western Mass. Yeah, definitely.
So, Notch, we know you guys. We're going to come and check you guys out. And Chris from Double Windsor.
It would be Victory's Liberty Bell Double IPA. They brewed it for Philly Craft Beer Week. We have it on now at Double Windsor. Brewed with Mosaic hops, which I love. I just go crazy every time I taste them.
And I was out in Milford, New Jersey, and I got to go to the Ship's Inn, which is a long-standing brew pub, and they do a lot of English-style beers. They had some pretty awesome beers. I would say that they had the Golden Wheat, which is like it's super light. It was 4% beer on a hot summer day. English-style, low carbonation. I have to say, if you're out in Milford, New Jersey, go to the Ship's Inn. All right, we're going to give sign-off notes and all that stuff. Tomorrow night we'll be at the Craft Beer Jam at WNYC's The Green Space. It's how to taste beer and how to homebrew. We've got John LaPola of Bitter and Esters, who's a great guy. Our beer educator, Sam Merritt of Civilization of Beer. Chris Kuzme and Mary Isaac of the Ferment About It show. We'll be there tomorrow night. Check out thegreenspace.org. And there's another show next week with all the Queens breweries. So that's our live like kind of summer event. We're so psyched to be there. And cheers to Heritage Radio Network for supporting us and to the Green Space of WNYC. Also happening tomorrow, Runner and Stone in Brooklyn. They'll be joined by Peak Organic Brewery to host a summer celebratory beer tasting. Check it out at runnerandstone.com. There's a lot of cool things happening in New York, you know. There's bread shops, pretzel shops, cheese people. Everyone's doing beer now. You know, there's Earl's Beer and Cheese. And New York is a great beer town. What do you guys think about that? Yes? All right.
Yes.
Okay, and tickets are still available for July 31st, Edibles Good Beer Event. Check that out. And also our special event, the New York State Food and Beer Expo, July 27th, with over 20 New York State craft breweries. Check out goodbrewsteel.com for more info. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com, who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is also supported by the Good Beer Seal. If you like this podcast, give us a good review on iTunes, too. Hey, I don't even know how to go to iTunes, but I think a lot of people who listen do. So thanks to Tom, James, Chris, Lauren, Warren, everybody, Jonathan and Liz. We got Chris, everybody, Tom, everybody, Joe, everybody, for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. So many people in this. I would love you guys. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, engineer Joe Galarraga. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio.
You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.